कुछ बोल नहीं आ गए हैं। Those negotiated already apologized for the time. We only have time in half of the nation. We know that some difficult people, other people come to Parliament. The Trump was sent this morning, and there were a lot of things that have been prevented from coming on time. Therefore, I would like to introduce you to me and the person sitting next to me. My name is Stoney Murukwa. I am the chairman of the Malawi Party. Sitting next to me is the Deputy Speaker of Parliament, Honorable Senator. He is going to be serving you. So far, I am opening this event, and I'm going to pass over to him to lead his remarks and welcome everyone. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, honorable members, ladies and gentlemen. We are delighted to have this opportunity to welcome you to Parliament for this important occasion. In addition to my overall responsibilities here, myself and honorable Kaun, the deputy chairperson of the National Council of Governments, are co-chairpersons of a multi-party steering committee that is responsible for what we have in the sectoral parliament. In other words, we have to manage and work with members here in the institution to coordinate and work with all specific sectors. For instance, we have the youth roundtable that is looking up to have the state of youth and so on. And today, the focus on issues that relate to the advancement of men. And tomorrow, in court, we will focus on other issues that relate, for example, to weapons. And in the past, in fact, previously we had one on sheriff. Part of the reason for doing this is many folks. But essentially what we thought we are about is not only to implement the vision of our country as contained in the Constitution, that we are about raising an ambitious and accepted democratic society that is prosperous. The specifics of doing that will involve institutions such as Parliament itself, in its conduct to oversee the work of the executive, to ensure that what we have agreed on to create this kind of society actually enters in the practical programs that each of the overseas department, national departments, and at the provincial and at municipal level carry out that function, and we are able to follow it. Perhaps it is appropriate to point out that in our strategy that we adopted as Parliament, we identify five priorities, and this work fits in well into that framework. First, that we are about strengthening oversight and accountability, enhancing public involvement, deepening engagement in international forums, strengthening cooperative governance, and strengthening legislative capacity. Part of the work that we need to advance the equality provision of the Constitution and many of our laws involves specific work to advance the cost of freedom. But not only that, that is also done as part of the overall work to promote, as I said, gender equality. Our ability to make impact is dependent not only on the planning that we're looking to agree to have this sectoral parliament, but effective monitoring and evaluation of
also become activists in this character.
In other words, that you should not be organizing events that are unconnected, that are unrelated often. But this is part of the sense of activities that are activist in nature. In other words, they focus on the practicals that are being done to carry out what we contain in our legislative framework and in the Constitution. That responsibility expects that members of parliament and the provincial legislature, members of organized society, including organized women's formation, including young people's formation as well, have critical inputs to make. We've had inputs in the past, in the committees of parliament, but also in specific public hearings that were held in various parts of the country. When we come together in this session, part of what we must get and talk about is the input that people have already given us. Some of those who come, for example, from an initiative that the speaker always talks about that happened in the third parliament, which was a series of activities aimed at capturing voices of women across society about their condition at the stage and having them published, but also saying that some of this work must be displayed. These were works of art, capturing oral as well as work that women did with their hands, so that this must be displayed to every legislator to remind all of us in those institutions that there are voices that must be shown in hearing, but not only that, but that we take action to implement some of the wishes that they express, which in any case are contained in the Bill of Rights of our Constitution. I also would like to point out that the priority we mentioned here about intensifying our interaction in international fora, a series of activities that happened here that are relevant to what we're talking about. The Select Parliamentary Forum first agreed, many of its member countries have agreed that the forum must be turned into a regional parliament which will play oversight on our countries in the region. One of the key focus work that is now under construction is a policy framework for a gender responsive oversight work by parliament, including obviously, as I say, in the region. Not only that, about a couple of weeks ago, the regional forum conducted an examination, for example, of the management of mineral resources in the region. And what is the role of women in the entire area of our economy? What kind of work is underway? What is happening to issues of gender equality in the mines and in the mining operations? Why is there in the entire value chain of mining? We do not see the effective participation and engagement of women throughout that value chain. And so, this is work that is underway, that I'm suggesting happens at the regional but continental level as well. We just come back from the CPA, the Commonwealth Parliamentary Association Conference in Kenya, and part of the work that we were doing there was to receive a report about progress since Beijing of the global commitments we made for the advancement of gender equality and of women. Part of our ability to participate effectively in this international forum is dependent on the quality of feedback we get from yourselves gathered here today and in other places throughout our society. So that both fora, when we take place, when we can, we are able to give you concrete feedback about the progress we are making to ensure we harness the strengths of each one of our countries around these issues, that we pull along those who remain behind at the basic level in advancing the quotas around women. government participation in key decision making, in key operations. But not only that we are now able to have mechanisms for assessing the content of progress of programs that are undertaken for the agenda purposes. That way, it's important in the region, in the continent, and globally. And we are refusing to continue to participate and agree with programs that are not in this way. So for our education, which is one of the decisions taken by the fourth parliament, that none of the decisions that are taken by government must go without parliamentary scrutiny and input. Now, this includes global commitment on issues of gender equality. We hope that the changes we have introduced to the management of sectoral talent will really contribute enormously to the work that I'm suggesting. You are better placed to try. But let me tell you from where we are sitting as a very committee of Madras here, that we expect that the activities that are undertaken are a series of undertakings that are throughout the year, from August to August, from year to year, so that when we look at the medium-term strategic framework, which is essentially a five-year plan of government to implement the decisions we have made, assess every year, that in there we are able to make an impact on agendas such as the agenda of the Southern Table. The intention was to be merely to make this opening remark and to suggest that we hope that with better organization, with more intense and focused regional participation, appropriately supported by budget, that the quality of the work and assessment of implementation of our work will be common. That you will somehow be better ways of organizing and coordinating this regular ongoing effective interaction between parliament, legislators, and communities, and community organizations, and other non-governmental organizations that say they represent people out there, which is an important part of the work that we must do together. It is coordinated in our priorities, so let's use the opportunity to really freshen and change the agenda for transformation. Madam Chair, I'm ending my remarks here by also saying that in the CIMAS Forum, which is a forum that brings together Parliament and the nine legislatures, increasing cooperation is happening here. And I have been requested to be the coordinator for the gender focus. Now, part of the difficulty is that the agenda of what comes in this program must come from this forum. I am coordinating. The previous deputy speaker was Honourable Normandy Affleck. She used to chair the Commonwealth Parliamentary Women's Group. So when I came in, I was told, no, sir, you can't take over that. This is a factor that must be ended by someone else, so I was taken up. But I'm really excited at the possibility of the kind of insight that will come from here, and we wish you all the constructive energy you are going to need to do so and inform of it. Madam Chair, thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you, Deputy Speaker. I knew you would just send me the time telling them about the thank you for your wise input and great input there. Now we are going to maybe change a few things on the agenda. If you look at your agenda, you have a presentation set up by all parliament by Honourable Arkham, who is the deputy chairman of the MOP. Unfortunately, he missed his plane. So we will begin this tomorrow. That is the change that I wanted to talk about. Having said so, the chairperson of the multi-party will come in. Honorable Deputy Speaker, honorable members of the legislators who are here, honorable ministers and deputy ministers who are present here, and honorable guests, honorable members of the CL Committee of the Multi-Party who are present here. Good morning. Women's March official came to a close yesterday. We all know that. During which the Department of Women in the President celebrated women under the theme, Women United in Moving South Africa Forward. Celebrations sought to highlight the contribution of women to South Africa, South Africa's liberation struggle, and focus on the impact of existing policies on women and gender equality in the past 21 years. In addition, on the 9th of 2016, President Jacob Zuma will launch the first report of the status of women report. This year is a very significant month for women. The 2015 Women's Month campaign takes place 20 years after the 4th World Conference on Women and Adoption of the Beijing Declaration and Platform of Action. This year is also significant as the world is assessing achievements with regards to the Millennium Development Goals and setting new sustainable development goals. Furthermore, 2015 has also been declared by African Union as the Year of Women's Empowerment and Development towards Africa Agenda 2063. And at the regional level, 2016 is the year that South African Development Committee SADC is reviewing progress made in the attainment of goals set by the SADC Protocol on Gender Development. The goal of gender equality has progressed leaps and bounds in the last 2 decades since the advent of democracy in South Africa. This has been evident both in how South Africa performs on international and regional indices, in the social institutions and gender index of the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, the OECD. South Africa ranked in the category low for gender discrimination in 2014 index. On the World Economic Forum Gender Gap Index, we have consistently remained the upper levels, reaching 18th position in 2014 out of the 142 countries. Based on the 2014 election, South Africa currently ranks 7th in wealth classification with 40.8% of representation of women in parliament. Representation is a significant indicator of a country's priorities with regards to women's rights. However, it is not important that women are represented in parliament. It is also vital that they occupy significant decision-making positions within parliament. In this regard, our parliament has a mixed performance. Of the 5 presiding officers, both in the National Assembly and the National Council of Provinces, we have both a female speaker and chairperson in the NCOP, while 2 of the House chairpersons in the National Assembly and 1 in the NCOP are female, as well as the chief whip of the National Council of Provinces. This constitutes 60% of leadership positions within Parliament. In addition, of 38 committees in the National Assembly, 67.9 are chaired by women. While the NCOP has 18.18% representation, within cabinet, 42.8 of national ministers are women, and out of 37 deputy ministers, 17 are female, constituting 45.9%. The United Nations Women has chosen the slogan, Planet 50-50 in 2030, to drive action towards an equal world by 2030. Similarly, South Africa's National Development Plan is a blueprint plan that aims to drive state action to eliminate poverty and reduce inequality by 2030. Given the United Nations Women's adoption of a plan to end gender inequality by 2030, the presence and opportunity to firmly make new action for gender equality into the National Development Plan, the NDP recognizes the need for an inclusive and integrated smart economy. With the aim of implementing effective land reform, ensuring food security, developing the potential of industries such as agro-processing, fisheries and tourism. In terms of women, the NDP recognizes the need to transform the economy to encourage the full participation of women and highlight public employment as an avenue for extending employment to women. A key measure for ensuring gender transformation and equal participation between women and men is allocation of budget to effect policy and legislative changes. The link between economic and political empowerment is key to enhancing the equal participation of men and women in decision making. Economic and political resources must be accessible to both women, men and women, in order to address inequalities between them. Thus, the Women's Roundtable will present a strategic focus on the attainment of the NDP. As it relates to women, as well as the role of gender responsible budget in attaining the goals set out in the NDP. Dismantling apartheid is still the central goal of the women's rights movement in achieving substantive equality for women. This is because despite progressive legislative foundation, women in South Africa will still face many challenges. About 56% of female homicides are committed by an intimate partner. Cervical cancer affects 1 out of 4 women and kills approximately 8 women daily. About 51.3% of female-headed households are poor compared to 29.5% of male-headed households. Access to basic social services and overall representation of women in parliament fell 1 point in the last election. This is a clear indication that there are still reasons to be vigilant about women's rights and representation. The ultimate role of members of parliament is to represent the needs and interests of their constituents, the majority of which are women. Thus, both male and female members of the parliament of all political parties must proactively pursue the goal of gender equality if they are to fulfill their mandate. The South African Parliament has the numbers to ensure that gender equality becomes a reality for ordinary women and men. It is critical for an active parliament to have a robust women's caucus, and it is even more important for all committees of parliament to actively drive the gender agenda. In this way, parliament will be able to make real the needs and aspirations of South African women. I thank you. I think we are going to take all the positions for now. I see here after the next speaker, there is going to be a tea break. and have about two presentations. I just hope between that time and lunch time will allow for people to pose questions of clarity and maybe some questions may lead to discussions. Thank you. Now we are going to call James Reiner, Department of Women in the Presidency. She is going to give us an gendering, the DP, NDP, and gender responsive budgeting. Yes. All you've got that.
Yes, but it's not touching to
all the content. That's fine. That's fine. So she's going to make a presentation from her seat because she's already connected there. Okay.
Chairperson, thank you very much, and good morning to everybody. It is indeed a real honour to be participating in this round table, and I hope to be thoroughly empowered by the time I come after, because when you put together a number of women in environment like this, we really do engender our discussions and move them forward. Chairperson, I have not prepared a presentation on the screen, but I have been undertaking that by the end of tomorrow I will finalise the presentation so that there is a revision and hopefully will be a useful process going forward. I would like to say that I really appreciate the way in which the Engendering the National Development Plan and Gender Responsive Budgeting have been combined, because I think that we often talk about the mechanisms and tools of gender mainstreaming aren't actually looking at the content of the program that we are running. So I'm hoping that by the time I have spoken, we will be able to ensure that we can look at how, and I think particularly picking up on the point that the Honourable Speaker had raised, that the NGSS is a five-year program, but each year we've got opportunities to review and apply. And I think that for me is the exciting element. And in a sense, because our first draft of our strategic plan, the government, was submitted to DBME yesterday, it also provides us with a very bold opportunity to look at how this year as we go forward, we may deal with things slightly differently. Perhaps behind the starting of engendering the National Development Plan is just a constant reminder to ourselves that we have a constitutional dispensation in the country that puts gender equality, women's empowerment very, very firmly as a constitutional principle in the Bill of Rights and in the various different sections of the Constitution, and that is where our mandate needs to ultimately derive from. So for me, it's putting together those threads that really enable us to look at how we engender our work, and most importantly, how we engender action delivery, because we can land up with a very wonderful constitution. If the lived experience of women is not reflecting those principles, you've still got a long way to go. You can land up with a beautifully engendered policy document, but if it's not translated into practice, it's very nice from your shop. It's going to remain that. And I think that for me is the critical element of the activist parliament orientation that, again, is one of the issues you have spoken of. And obviously, as government departments, that our main responsibility is to ensure that our program and our service delivery is in fact gender sensitive and gender responsive and can take the processes forward. You could approach any document by saying, is it sufficiently engendered? Does it say the right thing? Does it give us particular details? And the approach that I would adopt for this presentation is that the shape of the 2030 vision in the National Development Plan is that we put very clearly the issues of equality, the issues of reducing inequality, the issues of reducing poverty, the issues of reducing unemployment very firmly on the agenda. We are all aware of the fact that the NDP has been cascaded into the medium-term strategic framework and the 14 outcomes. And those 14 outcomes feed into our strategic plans of government and then into our annual performance. And in a sense, what we need to be looking at is whether as we cascade plans down to a more detailed level, are we actually looking at the gender targets and the gender indicators. sometimes we fall into the trap of saying there are particular things that are relevant for women, and we immediately jump to gender-based violence, and we immediately jump to reproductive health and HIV and AIDS. Absolutely valid, and for me, the critical challenge that we need to look at is the interconnection between those elements of the challenges that women face with other challenges, like the questions of economic empowerment, financial inclusion, employment opportunities, the responsibility for women to take the larger burden of both domestic productive work as well as community care work. Perhaps I'll just choose to give a very concrete example. If I am going to work in the morning and I have a spouse at home, I do have a spouse at home, but he doesn't do on the bike to do. If I have a spouse at home who abuses me, either psychologically or emotionally or physically, what state am I in to go to work the next morning and be effective in my job? So there is a very decided interconnectedness. If I am subject to physical abuse, or even emotional abuse, it's likely that my sick leave is going to be escalated. That has consequences for my ability to be productive. It has consequences for the organization that I'm part of to be productive. So we really do need, as we deal with the NDP and the NPFS and the outcomes, to start looking in a far more integrated way. If you take the 14 outcomes, there's not one of them that is not relevant to women of the country. And I also want to flag for us, because this is perhaps the kind of a real complexity comes around measuring the impact of our programs on the lives of women. We need to be able to disaggregate even the category of women. Our main challenge is to disaggregate data so that it is gender visible. But within that, there is a vast difference in the lived experience of somebody who lives in an informal settlement as opposed to somebody who lives in, Cape Town, in Constantia. We have access to resources, the protection, a whole range of basic services are vastly different in that environment. But equally, the experience of somebody who lives in an urban environment, where even if you are living in an informal settlement, there is a tertiary academic public hospital not very far away from where you live, despite the fact that there are transport challenges and other challenges to deal with. But if you're living in the rural areas in Bogota, how hard is it to get to the quality of medical care that you may need if you've got a very serious medical condition? Increasingly, there are health facilities close by, but does it give you the access to the quality of public sector hospitals that one needs? So we need also to be starting to get our data that we are measuring to be gender disaggregated, but also to be spatially specific. We have spatial inequalities in the country that we need to be able to address, and we have wealth differentials that we need to be able to address. So the point I was making was that all of the 14 outcomes are highly relevant for women in this country. But with that emphasis that they are more directly relevant or directly impactful for different other cultural groups, spatial groups, wealth differentiated task groups of women, and we need to take that into account. If one just looks at quality of basic education, obviously, we've made very significant gains in the country in terms of getting girls into school. And we've got a parity level there that is very important. And I think that I want to lift that up because using gender parity as an indicator of impact is actually not a useful tool. Sometimes it's quite easy to measure gender parity. How many kids are in the classroom? How many kids pass through that grade? In some areas, it's more complex to be able to look at what is the parity. For example, do you allocate hiring to an individual who can be categorized as male or female? Or do you allocate hiring to a family which consists of men and women, and sometimes consists of a number of families? It becomes more complex, and that's where a lot of technical work needs to be done around the the gender indicators, the gender targets, and our planning of our strategy. If you look at long and healthy life for all South Africans, our life expectancy is not yet, a comparable process at this stage. We have major challenges in terms of HIV and AIDS for women, particularly for the 15 to 24 age groups. Reproductive health is obviously one of the key dimensions of looking at a non-healthy life for South African women. So there, you'll see, if you look at the Department of Health, they've already got some very solid gender-specific indicators, tangible information, not just recently, but in fact over the last 20 years. When we move to looking at all people in South Africa are and being safe, our immediate response is gender-based violence, which is actually critical. And we have made major gains in terms of policy, in terms of initiatives. Have we solved the problem? No. Is it going to be solved by government alone? No. This is going to require a national effort. And I think that that, again, is where engendering the National Development Plan is critical, because the National Development Plan is not just a plan for government, it's actually a national effort. And we need to again be looking at how do we ensure that in our stakeholders and in our partnerships, we're able to ensure that the other social partners, our social partners as government, are also contributing to the achievement of these objectives. But underpinning all people in South Africa are and feel safe, if you go back to a document as early as the 1997, 1996 National Crime Prevention Strategy, there was a major analysis there of the impact of urban design on crime, and it's particularly relevant for women. It's particularly relevant also for women as we become more involved in the economy, because we leave our homes, we go to transport, we often early in the morning to streets that are not necessarily property lit. If they are property lit, again, if we are able to take it with the hands.
Njengomuntu nami oyisilelapha ngihlangane lelungelo lokuthi ngihlale njengomuntu esifazane. Ngebhadi ngicela ukuthi kwaziwe ukuthi ngicela lokho sitozitolika. Kudlange uphathisane nami kahle ngoba nami ngibona abantu bakusantasheni. Ngiyabonga.
Honorable Macau. Into the situation that I think that I do. God is here. That's how we learn to use our work when we use. Abadi, Abarafa, Abadi, Kobadi, Akona, Aoye, Kobadi, Shibi, and the thing that we are doing. So, Bangabu, the name is Linda. God is here.
Thank you. Let me move from outcome 3 to looking at outcome 4.
I'm sorry, this is getting you the process that's coming. Channel 6.
We doesn't have rights for the interpreter upstairs, but interpretation is available. And they're not. So we can proceed. Just use your earpieces and we'll check it okay.
Yeah, I'm not going to be a good person. Leno, sifaka ezindleleni. Apha phambi kwethu ngasekuqele sizawukwazi ukucofa sifake i-challenge 6. Noba uthathe noba ningakhange nicofe ifake endleleni wendlele sizawubhala nizayibhala isikhetha ingacofi into ngoba anto sebeyenza ngokungabi seleyo. Enkosi kakhulu. You may go on.
I hope that I'm speaking in a way that makes the translation easy. So I will periodically just check that the translator is with me. I was talking briefly to teaching some permits to increase of growth. Now, again, a critical element here of ensuring that women's participation within the economy is something that is enabled, both in the sense of job creation and ensuring that the unemployment levels for women, and particularly for young women, are reduced, but also ensuring that women are able to take their place as full participants in the full arena of the economy. Women very often are involved in the informal sector of the economy.
Information in their departments that is gender sensitive. They can give you the gender
disaggregated data. But we've got half for it in the NTSA. Now, my reason for wanting us to pick up on that point is that if you are going to look at gender response to budgeting, in a sense, it's a connected end point, because it's the planning that actually needs to make the gender visible. It's the identification of what the indicators are that will enable us to say this particular program, this particular strategy is having an impact on women and having the desired impact. That's where creation of the relevant indicators becomes very important. And I think that we currently still have a bit of a misalignment of our strategic planning and our budgeting cycles. Hopefully as we improve, we will be able to ensure that we deal with strategy, and we then deal with the 2008 annual performance plan, and we then deal with the budgeting process. But it's very difficult to track gender responsive allocation of money and the impact of that if you haven't actually got the indicators that enable you to be able to deal with taking deliberate conscious goals. Too often we assume that women will benefit from a program, and sometimes they do, and sometimes they don't. It makes it visible, we know that we will be able to achieve that. It becomes, for us as the accounting officer of the department, a very important tool for us to be able to measure our own success. It obviously also becomes a very important part of our executive authority's ability to determine whether we're having the desired impact, but equally from policy. Just as I thought, rather than going through the detail of gender responsive budgeting frameworks, which we are still working on that as a department, and it will obviously be coming back to Parliament as we pull that work together, I thought it would be probably useful if we should just reflect briefly on South Africa's track on gender responsive budgeting since 1995, because for me there's a very important lesson. It started as an initiative from women parliamentarians supported by NGOs. A process was driven by members of parliament who themselves were gender activists and really wanted to ensure the constitutional principles were instilled in the way that it worked. But as we all know, members of parliament change and processes in parliament grow and change. There was then an initiative to embed us in the Ministry of Finance and in Treasury, led by the then Deputy Minister of Finance, who in fact had been one of the members of Parliament who'd been very instrumental in the Women's Budget Initiative in Parliament. And in that time period, 1998, 1999 through to 2000, you see gender issues being raised in the budget speech, in the budget review, and an engagement on gender response budgeting coming to more strongly. But then we had, in a sense, a lull period. A lull period that has also then resulted in the Department of Women, Children, People with Disabilities and the Department of Women now picking things up. There's also been very interestingly, and again, speaking to what the Honourable Secretary has been saying about SAG and the parliamentarian's role in relation to SAG and developments there. SAG has a gender responsive budgeting framework, and it's going to be very really interesting to see how those two come together. The report, the information that is embedded in that government gives us a sense that within the region, we've got incredible unevenness. We've got some countries that are moving ahead very successfully, others that are moving successfully in certain parts of the budget, but not others. So a process there that we'll be able to learn from best practice, but at the same time also ensure that we take a more regional monitoring that will take us forward. In the SAG gender responsive budgeting framework, I think the key element that comes through is that we can't look at gender responsive budgeting as if it's a responsibility of a Ministry of Women or a Ministry of Gender. We can't look at it as if it's a responsibility of the Ministry of Finance. It actually requires one, the Ministry of Finance and therefore Treasury, as the department that drives that, to engage in their processes, gender responsive budgeting, and make it visible in their budget circulars, the requirement for us to look at reprioritizing money for gender impact, and ensuring that we interrogate the question. But equally, The department's planning, monitoring, and evaluation is responsible for planning. And if we don't then update the planning framework of our strategic plan, of our entities and our strategic plan and our NTP, again, are required to make gender impact and gender indicators visible, will be allocating money to actual delivery processes. And that's always one of the challenges in analyzing a budget, to make sure that, for example, the indicators say this money is really being spent on certain delivery programs that are happening in the tax. Equally, the Ministry of Women, the Minister and the Ministry and the previously responsible for men in our case and other instances referred to as gender ability, plays a very important role because of the responsibility to ensure that we are gender mainstreaming across the whole of government, particularly in terms of socio-economic empowerment programs. GSA has responsibility to ensure that the organisation of the state, and in particular the National School of Government, becomes a very important vehicle for being able to ensure that we build the capacity of public servants to be able to do gender responsive or gender sensitive planning, as well as gender responsive budgeting and therefore financial reporting. But equally, if one does not have the involvement of all ministers, we will not land up and all ministers and therefore all departments. We will not have the kind of impact that we want of being able to ensure that in the content of every major government strategy, the impact for women and girl children, and it's not forget the girl children ultimately become the women. And if we don't ensure that we lose the generational sustainability of our programs. To summarize then as a conclusion, I think the key elements that we need to ensure in our framework that we are working on is that it does include the planning dimension, that it does include the budgeting dimension, that it includes the responsibility for gender mainstreaming very firmly with accounting officers, that we need to ensure that it becomes an integral part of interrogation of all strategic plans, all budgets. And I think that is perhaps the niche where the engagement with Parliament becomes a tool that can help us progressively to go forward. It is complex. There are some areas in which developing gender indicators is easy. There are others in which it's really complicated. It's more complicated when one wants to have indicators that enable one to track the impact on different categories of women. So that one is not having unintended consequences for one group of women while benefits for another group of women. We are not going to get this right as a country in 1 year. It is going to be an incremental process going forward, but I think our experience is such that the more that we have with the role players being able to co-own the desired impact. And the desired impact obviously is that the constitutional provisions of equality and empowerment become a reality, and that we are able through the National Development Plan and the SDGs incrementally to be able to get to that point. So I hope that that's in a sense of the ongoing work that we need to do in our strategic planning processes and in the oversight of those strategic planning processes, in our partnerships with our social partners, and most importantly in terms of building the capacity of the state, because without building that capacity to really be able to use a gender lens to look at our work as government, we will find ourselves falling short. But most importantly, if we want to avoid the kind of up and down process that we've had, we need to ensure that gender plan, gender sensitive planning and gender responsive budgeting is firmly embedded in the strategies and policy documents that relate to planning and budgeting. Thank you.
Siyabulela uSikazi Jenny Schreiber. Besicele uDG Diva Nkisu sifuna ukuba ezindaba zibalulekile kangaka zivela kwiDepartment yamakhosikazi azosichazela kakho ukuba sisebenza ngohlobo njengoba sithetha nale phakuthi sithetha nge-50-50 siyazi uba ikangakanani na ukujika iimpilo zamakhosikazi, siyazi uba xa sithetha ngebhajethi into Sutibana Naso as the obstacle safety. Kodwa sizawuba nomntu ovela kwibhajethi, if you look at your agenda, ozakuchazela uba ipalamente yona iyithekela ngoluhlobo. Sesivile ke from the DG ukuba sintoni na esidibana nazo. Thank you very much, Jenny. I think Snake. It's a tea break. I thought we'd call her now. Oh, but I can call her again somebody going to whether it's tea call. Oh. Well, now we can leave my lady. I'm so glad you know. But what we can do, ukuthi abanye abantu abafuna ukuwusela ithi sihleli kakhulu abambezela abantu ifostana ngoku sithi kwezi-relations zethu uba abantu bafuna i-question of clarity ekuzo mhlawumbe singaqhubekeka ngazo abantu bangazithatheli ithilezi honorable Ncobo.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thanks for all the presentations that have been given. Maybe one more question, but as we talk about women empowerment and women towards gender equality, then I also look into girl and boy children. For many, many reasons, we need to bring the boy child on the fore. For instance, if you think of what happened with the last week, where kids at school, kids of 7 and 8, were already involved in sexual activity, raped in inverted commas. Let's look into that aspect very seriously. I was quite excited that we are bringing back the women's budget, because it's nothing new, it's been there. But how effective is the women's budget? It's been there. And how effective is it? Maybe. And we'll be informed about that because the department, I wonder how bad are they dealing with the issue of gender, women's budget. And finally, if we are serious about gender equality, let us also look into the mechanisms that we had before we came to now. How bad are the departments dealing with gender equality and departments themselves? So that we begin to look at it. I'm saying departments because even the community and the people out there come into departments, how are they treated on basis of their gender? So, in order to empower women across the board. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Just one thing before I allow other hands. There is somebody who would like to interpret. I don't know whether they are going to interpret from up there. What about the others? Okay. I'm going to give you numbers because I don't know the names of other people. Pardon me. You are number 2. Mali is number 3. Number 4. Yeah, and I'm going to come to the side. Let us give the opportunity to the people on my right. Number 2.
Thank you, Jefferson, for the opportunity. I also want to welcome the presentation made. My concern only when it comes to the implementation part, everything that we said in place. Because we have all the policies, all regulations, but still things are happening. One of the challenges is that we identify about the private sector is talking about also in our different departments, people are not doing gender equality. Because we transfer the high position, they will still only go to male persons. The commissioners, and then you go down from commissioners up to DGs and all of that. You will only find majority is male persons in our department. When it comes to the private sector, when it comes to senior management like CEOs, you will only find the majority is from men. What are we going to do about it? Because so far we move on and yet we're changing equality when it comes to line positions, but not when it comes to the main targets where women can be as a side effect within the department or within the private sector. All those powers never get to women. Then the other thing I want to come to the tips. Children, boys and girls. I agree with the Honourable Member, we need to bring them in from grade A level. Because if you look to what happened last week, it's kids in grade 5, grade 6, grade 7. So if we can bring them in grade A level, it will be good. Because they already, they will get things that there's no difference between them. They are equal. Thank you.
Thank you. Honourable Matteo.
Thank you very much, Chair President, and thank you for the presentation. Thank you, DG, for the presentation. Again, you're welcome. I think it's exciting the round table is pretty long overdue, and it's very exciting for the strategy DG for a long time. And I think, you know, recently I attended a function by the British Women of South Africa whereby they were giving out the statistics of women in decision making. I mean, but maybe private sector. And from themselves, from presentation, they acknowledged that the public sector is far ahead on women's representation than the private sector. So they were saying they are less to be next from the public sector. But I think there is something that we're doing right. And as we do those things right, within the public sector or on our way to fulfilling whatever parity and equality, that we need also to engage and challenge the private sector to also bring along those women. Secondly, the budget. I think it's welcome, the women's budget. I think it is the responsibility of every person, both men and women. Because men not never would be those who are conscious kinds who take it up at JJ, they wouldn't. That in our own respective portfolio committee meetings, we need to to ask questions to the departments, agencies, DGs and ministers on what percentage of their budget is allocated for women, for young people, people with disabilities. And also to scrutinize that it shouldn't be around catering and cleaning. But in real procurement that will be allocated. So we're supposed to be the eyes and ears, and we're supposed to be that worker that should stay on board, engage those citizen departments and ministers, that in the representation of the budget, they have to show us the percentage that is allocated for women and in which areas that is. So my challenge is that it is our responsibility. We need to do that for the women out there. Thank you, Chair President.
I'm very sorry to have overlooked the issue of people introducing themselves before they speak. Starting with number two, can you tell us who you are? Because I know the one who has been speaking, that is the national chairperson of the Commonwealth of Africa, Lindiwe Mafeng. Thank you. Yes, can you introduce yourself?
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm Sharon Davis. I'm a member of the legislature for the Parliament of the Ocean Care. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. My name is Lindiwe Mafeng, a member of Parliament of the National Assembly, Week of Science and Technology, Chairperson
of Commonwealth Parliamentary Association of African Nations. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I'm the Member of Parliament, Chair of the Subcommittee. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I'm Mary Fraser, a member of the Provincial Legislature in KwaZulu-Natal. Thank you. Thanks for the presentation, thank you, Jenny. While we acknowledge the fact that we have done a lot of things in schools, my focus will be on outcome number one, quality education. We acknowledge the fact that we are addressing COVID as a government, but I'm having a concern in terms of girls. I want to check with the department, do we have any plans of rolling out the sanitary towels? Because you've noticed that it's still a challenge to our girls.
The challenge is not in the policies, it's in the practice, it's actually critical. But for
me, that's where the monitoring evaluation comes so important. Because if we have determined that for this policy, this is the relevant indicator that will say that we are making a difference, it then enables us to say, this indicator, we're not reaching the target. Why? What are we doing in terms of the implementation that enables us, that is preventing us from getting to that target? And therefore, we constantly are improving our implementation strategy. And I think that that is the most important part of this administration, to really be able to focus on the monitoring in order to improve the implementation. The issues around the public sector gains, the private sector non-gains around equity, but also acknowledging the point that in the past, the public sector, we've not got to where we really need to get to. And it is something that's fluctuates as we go through, but it is something that we need to ensure is a very, very capacity. And I think the part of what has assisted us in the public sector is a process of six incremental parts. And those are the kind of lessons that I think that the private sector needs to learn. In the public sector, cabinet, parliament can fix targets for all of us, and you are obliged to strive for them. In the private sector, you don't have the same regulatory process, although let us also look at to what extent are the equity mechanisms, the equality mechanisms in existing law actually being implemented, and are we monitoring those efficiencies, and is the private sector implementing those with patterns or a tick-off where they usually have to tick-off. And hopefully the more that we engage with the better markets, the more we will actually get the private sector to really step up to that. One of the elements that constantly gets put back by the private sector is, they aren't amazing. Well, they are. And I think that the progress we've made in the public sector is a very good indication. They are women, and they're part of women, and they're women who take these jobs extremely seriously, grow and learn, and develop in the process. One of the hopes to see the same process in the public sector. But at the same time, if we don't address the issues like financial inclusion of women, how do women actually develop us? And that is one of the key elements, to be able to ensure that through the Department of Small Business Development, they have adopted a slogan of saying small is bigger, small business is big business. And indeed, if we empower people directly in terms of those, in terms of co-ops, we are also building women's capacity within the private sector. I think the issue of oversight of Parliament is a very useful instrument that can help us to move forward. And I do think that the issue of the procurement spend is an important element in terms of the categories of youth with disabilities and what we have, young women, women with disabilities and women. But I do think that we need to also ensure that gender-sponsored budgeting is not only going to look at the procurement spend, much as it's a very important part of the government injecting into the economy, and it is particularly important in terms of localization and the development of local and women-owned businesses. But we also need to ensure that we look at the extent to which the budget is being allocated to services that most directly impact on women. So it's essential as we go forward that we don't land up with just looking at the procurement process, but we also get into a more complex process, which is looking at how the budget is allocated to services that impact on the lives of women. The last question, Chairperson, was around the issue of sanitary towels for girls related to the impact on their education. And indeed, we fully agree that it is an absolutely critical process. We are in the process of thinking through the mechanics of how you actually ensure that is done. And it will be a process in which we will be engaging with other departments. Social development will be a key department in terms of this. Obviously, the Department of Basic Education will also be an absolutely key program. But we need to ensure that as we move to being able to do that in a sustainable way, that we are able to ensure that we don't reach the girls, children, and their students that's most important. And it is rural areas and it is the schools where we have the poverty issues most prevalent. So it is an area of our concern, and we certainly are open to any suggestions and proposals that can come. but will need to be something that is as important as going to be something that is just the number that I'm touching on.
Thank you, Jenny. Now I can read everyone when we have again. It's 10 minutes, but I know it's 3 minutes. I'm going to call you. Abantu bangabuza imibuzo ngelanga lomlando uyabuza.
Thank you. what else we have.
You are already fast, no, 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 no,
I'm not going to be able to do it.
Honorable member, honorable House, the House at large, before we allow the people on the left who have had their hands up for questioning, the table wants to explain something to us.
Thank you, Honourable President. Good morning to the distinguished delegates. Two announcements we would like to make. One is that tomorrow, just before the commissions, there will be a photo session on the stage. Photo session. Coming back to today's proceedings, we wish to apologize for the issues around interpretation. This venue is designed for a single channel, so we have interpretation already available for delegations from the natural to English. So when they ask questions, this interpretation will be available for that. However, in view of the special requests that have been made, we have made additional provision for interpretation from English, Sisulu, and English in this channel. And Sisulu is channel 3, and this is called channel 4. So, the six requests that we made. And our technical services have tried to create that capacity in terms of the channels. And we hope that, that we meet the requirements of the honorable delegates. Delegates will require fine language. Interpretation could please indicate, and provision was made for that facility for them.
Okay, thank you. As agreed, I think I'm going to take the first hand from the left. Honorable Masha, yes. And will be number two, and I expect to introduce themselves. Number two, number three, number four, number five. Yes. Yes, number two is number one is the best.
Thank you.
Before we start, ngibonga nalokho kuhlonipha kengaphambi kaqazothukhethu nesabangelo limeni lesilala e-South Africa. Ngiyabonga. Umbuzo wami la njengomama wase-South Africa uqondene kanje ukuthi nabaka abantu besifazane bayaphela, bayadutshulwa, bayarayishwa lento ebizwa ukuzwelulwa ingane nogogo kanjalo nalabantu abayibophezukubo. Ikakhulukazi siyathola ukuthi inhloso yokubulawa kwabo ukuze kuthathe izitho zabo zangasese yingenxa yalezi zinyanga ezingekho emthethweni engasuke iqhamulayo egcwele umhlaba wonke especially la e-South Africa. Ukuthi ziphile ngazo ngawo lo mkhuba omumbi ofikayo. Okwesibili umbuzo onoma thina ngempela sithi soyiba kanjani ukuthi sihlasele abantu besifazane. Owesibili umbuzo ingabantu besifazane abangafelokazi kuthola ukuthi ekhaya kushone ubaba la ekhaya umama akhona oyedwa osebenzayo nokushumane kubona sinje somnotho ubhizi omama akanamuza kanalokuthi uthwele kanzima uyafundisa ingane. Abafelokazi ngempela ngempela yini usizo labo
My question therefore is,
I want to know whether there are challenges that South African women are facing that must therefore be addressed through racial cooperative. I'm not sure whether I'm making myself clear on this one. Then the last one would be not a question, it's more of to the Minister for Women, Children and Students with Disability. You've got a clear message. And we expect, in fact, we, my constituency, expect to get a clear or rather a detailed report on what has been achieved thus far. Thank you.
Before I allow the text, we've got members of the steering committee, and they have indicated to me that they feel that they are fighting. So we are free to ask questions from the department. I know they need to say it. I know you are one of them. Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The question I'd like to know to ask deals with teen pregnancies, but more specifically, termination of pregnancies. Can we have a dialogue that can I just say?
As I said at the beginning, I thought you have agreed that it is
fine. Apologies. Okay. So, my name is Sonia Baker, I'm a member of Parliament National Assembly. Do we have reliable statistics indicating the termination of pregnancies? We do have some statistics regarding teen pregnancies, but I'm more concerned about not the full-term pregnancies, the termination of pregnancies versus full-term pregnancies. How prevalent is this? What impact is it having on a young girl in school and the counselling that goes with it? Is there some kind of training process to provide counselling, not just for the girls, but for the boys as well, as we noted earlier, the importance, perhaps around the responsibility that goes with both, whether it's full-term or termination, and the impact of that. Thank you.
Number four.
Good morning. Thanks for giving me the opportunity to express something. I would like to know, what is the reason that women, when they reach a certain age, are no longer employable? I know we have great unemployment in the country, and I know the young people should be top of the agenda. But I do believe that women still have, their body might not be able to do manual work, but you still have a brain, and I feel that it could be used somewhere, even if to mentor somebody, because I am chairperson of a home for senior ladies, and they all want to be involved in making a little bit of money and helping the community, and there just doesn't seem to be any opportunities for that.
Hi.
Thanks, Chen.
I'm going to be very quick. Thank you to the Chairperson of the Multi Party. He spoke about the 60% of national elections as being women. Question to him is how will they ensure that that reflects to the legislation, and also that we see that women are being recognized and placed in the leadership in the legislation. And to Jenny, the DG, he's speaking a lot about the gender budgeting. But my point, I need to hear her speaking about the monetary and the evolution of the quality of the service relayed by this department, including the oversight. Where do they report? How do we ensure that we keep this department accountable and get that information on that, so that we don't write and say we don't know all this, nothing has been done by this department. Sometimes the inquiry commission leads to that. I think this is a form of some accountability that will be able to clarify that. And all I want to add on what Adam has said when he spoke about the girl child, because I think he's making lots of emphasis on girl child, and sometimes it will speak to the history of the time when women had a status of minor and how we seek now to reverse the imbalances of the past. But my point is, I still feel that both girl child and boy child needs to be brought up together, such that they both understand that they are equal. There is no one bigger than the other, even if the circumstances around them dictate to them otherwise. If they are put together all the time, not differentiated because of the gender, that will be able to address those differences. And further say, when the budgeting is done, I think it's important that you understand the statistics of South Africa. If the statistics are still saying 1 in 4 is boy or girl, or it says maybe 30%, I think that we need to have a clear statistic so that when we are allocating these resources, we understand that women remain more than men, and equality in this instance might not address the fact that women are still not in stream in terms of their issues. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. My name is Polina Mangeleni, a member of the Western Cape Provincial Education.
Thank you, Chair Christian. My name is Gladys Utsan from the Netherlands Chair Christian, I was just following up about the issue of leaders because we don't go at our brother Peter when we go to leaders. We know that the Northern Cape is vast and it's more rural. And to see that a woman is not working, but the man is working, and the woman dies. And then the justice is taking everything they said, I don't know what they call it in English. They take the money and everything. And then it will stay for 2-3 years there until the woman gets hired. You understand me, where am I going? To go into the state health state thing. Now, okay, we are not against the health state thing. But we want the section in the justice that state for a time. Because when the woman is not working and the man dies, the children are suffering. They must also look into that for this certain section to be implemented. Because you cannot wait for 3 years, and then when they ask, when social development, then they said, no, you don't qualify, the money is in the bank. What money is in the bank? Because the money is in the bank only by paper. The woman cannot even touch the money. It's only there. All those things, it's disturbing because you will see that in rural areas, you can cry if you can see these things. And another thing, the budgeting. Let national treasury come up straight with the budgeting of the nation, of gender. Straight to us. The cake must be sliced to us because whenever you go, put it through the department, through the legislature, is going somewhere and then you say, no, you only get 1% of the size of cake because there's no money for gender. We want to know how much is one woman budgeted for. One woman budgeted for. So let the size of cake, when they say gender is getting 40%, then we know that how many millions are we talking about. Because women are more millions than men, but men are getting more millions than women. Just about it is not yet finished when it comes to women.
Thank you, Mama. Yes. I'm going to give you a check. The previous. What you give them, they are not going to be but one. And the question that has been asked by Mama really, I hope we are going to be able to answer that. After this, I'm going to give the epidemic to respond, Mrs. Robinson.
Thank you, Chair. I'm Denise Robinson. I'm a Shadow Minister for Women. I serve on the Portfolio 2 and a gender activist for the first quarter. I just want to say too that, you know, we've heard about the status of widows who very often are disinherited or lose their rights within the family. And there are many other cases where widows are really left destitute, possessions taken, money taken, and they also suffer, women generally, about not receiving maintenance payments. But we also talk about our teens, and I think we need to have a campaign to educate younger people and older people about the value of having an antenuptial contract when you do get married. Because most people just seem to think the only way is getting married in community of property. And then whatever you have is divided, but even your debts, or say the husband's debts, are lumped onto the woman after they have been divorced. So I think one needs a clear campaign about how you can have your own individual finances, but you must sign that contract before you get married or get into some sort of a relationship. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. My name is Shina Kimene. I'm the member of the steering committee of multicultural soccer. Chair, let me join other members who welcome the presentation by yourself and the GG. But where I want to raise only in gendering and NDP, I had a GG who was talking about having a data for us to be able to achieve I think one of the issues besides the data that I think we need to look at is to looking at the this term it has said to be focusing on radical transformation. Are we going to see the radical transformation within the process of engendering the NDP? For instance, the priorities of government, one of them is agriculture, land and reform. Well, we know that majority of women are supposed to benefit in that regard. But the question is the budget following that priority? Because that's something that we have to relook when we have to make sure that we engender the NDP is to make sure that resources goes to priorities as outlined by government. Because as written, if you look at now, agriculture, the budget is 1% of the total budget, which means that majority of women are supposed to benefit, particularly because South Africa is a rural country. Secondly, is the question of which was raised on the issue of a girl child. We know that Africa, as we speak, majority of people is youth, which means that our program should focus on young women, must focus on young women and come up with the programs that will make sure that indeed we can feed those realization of those programs into Parliament. And us, as members of Parliament, in terms of asking questions, we should then be able to say, how do we mobilize ourselves as women Parliament for us not to spend as political parties and work towards making sure that all partners are making sure that Gini's work is becoming easier in making sure that there is that together budget. Because often as women, as we are being deployed, we want to represent our political parties. Forget that women, the oppression of women in Qatar doesn't look at the political party, doesn't look at the race. We just have to stand up and say, what is it that, given this information, as women from parliament, as women from legislature, how can we make sure that the priorities of government are realized even in terms of resources? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Kinia. Could you remember my name? I'm going to talk about it. I'm going to make a question, and I hope you will bear with me. I've just looked at the time. We have got about 6 persons from the side. And can you just confirm that we'll be here tomorrow? No. Okay. But nevertheless, we have to defer the questions to tomorrow. There is a recap if you look at the program. So that we allow these two presenters to come before we go to the for lunch. Is that fine with you? I don't want to say I'm using my authority here, using that very general. I want to request from you, is this fine? Thank you. So we're going to allow Honorable Ben to come in and give us a presentation on parliamentary tools for ensuring gender mainstreaming and launch of the manual for mainstreaming women, children, and persons with disabilities. Over to you, Honorable Ben. Can someone come in and this is our goal. That was that time we done.
Thank you, Chairman. Greetings to you all. My name is Thomas Nabengo, the member of Parliament, and the week of the Political Committee on Women in the Presidency. I'm going to talk about this document, this book. I hope you all have been okay. Chairperson, women, children, and persons with disabilities constitute a significant proportion of the population in South Africa. According to the statistics, South Africa, 51% of the population is women. 89% of the children or persons under the age of 18 live in South Africa, and persons with disabilities make up 7.5% of the population. With such a terrible constituency, it is imperative that the laws being developed and implemented, as well as the programs and services rendered, as to give effect to the rights of women, children, and persons with disabilities. Since the advent of democracy, laws and policies have been developed, programs and services have been implemented to give effect to the Constitution, ensuring the rights of women, children, and persons with disabilities. However, despite this significant strife, women, children, and persons with disabilities continue to face discrimination in various aspects of their lives. The presentation today brings to the fore many of these challenges, and the Commission of Things that will be held tomorrow will provide the opportunity for further discussion. A key aspect of the discussion underpinning this roundtable is the National Development Plan and focusing on how to give effect to it from a gender perspective as well as financing for gender equality. Members of all state legislatures have a crucial role to play in this regard. The launch of this publication, which has the manual for members of parliament, mainstreaming women, children, and persons with disabilities That comes at an opportune time. The mainstream manual was developed to assist all the members in the National Assembly, the National Council of Provinces, and the provincial legislatures to effectively undertake their roles as judges by fulfilling, protecting, and promoting the rights of women, children, and persons with disabilities during the term of the Fifth Parliament. The objectives of these manuals are as follows: to highlight the role of members that they can play in promoting the rights of women, children, and persons with disabilities, to identify key legislation pertaining to women, children, and persons with disabilities, to identify key international binding instruments pertaining to women, children, and persons with disabilities, and the role of members in overseeing the implementation of this, to promote mechanisms for conducting effective oversight when taking into account issues pertaining to women, children, and persons with disabilities, to articulate the importance of enhancing the public participation of women in legislative processes, to raise awareness on issues of cooperative government as they take care of women, children, and persons with disabilities, to raise awareness about the internal structures and issues within legislation as they pertain to women, children, and persons with disabilities. This conference manual provides members with essential information that relates to women, children, and persons with disabilities, which is intended to support and aid the work of legislation. The manual is divided into three units. Unit 1 focuses on the legislative framework and provides an overview of the constitutional imperatives, international binding instruments, legislation, and national policy. Unit 2 applies the core functions of legislation, namely legislation, oversight, public participation, international participation, and operative government. The last section of the manual, which is Unit 3, focuses on the international structures and policies within legislation, such as the role of the multi-party women caucus and certain key international policies such as family policies, sexual harassment, and reasonable accommodation policies. Furthermore, this manual sets out the relevance for gender perspective, child and disability rights perspective, and why it must be considered in the following core functions of the legislature. This core function includes the following: 1, the strengthening of oversight and accountability. Matters related to women and children and persons with disabilities as such are not the sole prerogative of committees focusing on social welfare matters such as health, education, and social security, but fall beyond the scope, giving the duty bearers responsibility to serve on legislation. Collateral of committees in this regard is very important in each within and between the various legislatures. Budgeting is another crucial aspect of oversight. That gender reported budgeting from a child's right, which is a material perspective, should be applied to personnel votes during in-year monitoring of quarterly reports, the budget review and recommendation report, and so forth. Number 2, enhancing public involvement. This the representation of women, children, and persons with disabilities must be ensured as public participation platforms provided for by the legislature, which this manual also focuses on. As opportunities for meaningful participation must be provided for women, children, and persons with disabilities to ensure that they are not excluded from public participation platforms. Number 3, deepening engagement in international fora. This is an important aspect in the consideration of international and regional agreements for ratification, as well as the oversight of the stage in terms of its reporting duty. Legislators have a very crucial oversight role in terms of assessing and overseeing the implementation of treaties, conventions, etc. This includes assessing the extent which a convention has been given effect through the modification as well as monitoring and assessing compliance within the constitutional obligations. Members also participated on various international fora where the rights of women, children, and persons with disabilities are discussed on broader platforms in relation to binding instruments and agreements. Number 4, strengthening operative government. This manual will briefly examine the importance of participating cooperative government between the three spheres of government and ensure that the rights of women, children and persons with disabilities are being promoted in the process. Lastly, the strengthening of legislative capacity in terms of the legislation and responsibility, this manual highlights the importance of taking into consideration the rights of women, children and persons with disabilities during the development and or amendment of legislation as well as monitoring the implementation thereof. The committee session and research unit of Parliament is commended for working together to produce such an invaluable resource like this manual. It indeed speaks to one of the key aims of Parliament, which is to provide and host an innovative, transformative, effective and efficient parliamentary service and administration that enables members of Parliament to fulfill their constitutional responsibilities. The vision of the Peace Parliament is an activist and responsive people's parliament that improve the quality of life of Africans and so ensure and better quality in our society. This manual will certainly aid members in giving effect to such a vision. Members are encouraged to strengthen it when carrying out their whole function by protecting, promoting and fulfilling the rights of men, children and persons with disabilities. I would like to conclude by thanking the team of support staff from Parliament for producing this publication for all members of Parliament. They are honored. I'm going to name them. Kashiba Abba, Christian Jay, Sergei Nesis, Jenny Patrov, and Domino Korotis from Community Section and the Research Unit. The co-editors are Carmen Raskin and Joy Watson from the Research Unit. The content editor is Kashiba Abba from the Community Section. Design and layout is Angela Ramos from Multimedia Unit, Parliamentary and Communication Services. I hope you will enjoy the launch of this book and you will also be of importance to you. Thank you all on the channel.
Thank you, Honorable Bengu. I wish to leave the seat for a while, but before I go, I would like to respond to the 67 question from the Honorable Lema. The 67 effective later, and I assume provinces have got multi-party women caucus. Not all of them. To say she comes from paper. Women gay. So that is maybe, but I do agree that maybe it was an oversight because we called provinces have got multi-party. Of which they will tell us what the status is and also release their report so that it can be captured by the research. That is our duty also maybe to find out what the status is exactly in legislation. We will do so with the assistance of the municipalities in the province. I hope that addresses your concern. We are going to have a chairperson. This is our whip. And she might not be like me because she's a whip. She's going to share a whip. So you must be focused. Honorable and Tatsin. Kuno, Honorable Tatsin Kuno, that is our mission to be chairing the rest of the program. Thank you for your cooperation. If I don't find you here, you must know that I'll meet you tomorrow. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and
Thank you very much, Honorable Bengu, for your presentation on parliamentary tools for ensuring gender mainstreaming. I think we have discussions later, but if you look at the program, we're going to have a presentation now from Professor Anita Heck, parliamentary by the office, and the presentation will be on parliament and the and gender budget, setting the example.
Honourable Chair, honourable members, ladies and gentlemen, honourable Deputy Speaker, honourable Deputy Chair, the SLP. Before I start, I also see that the Deputy Minister just a particular praise to one of my top editorial, who is also one of my bosses department, so thank you that I'm here. Ladies and gentlemen, or ladies, I don't know if I should mention gentlemen here, but ladies and gentlemen, my point is going to focus on gender responsive budget. And I think the issue that was raised by the DC and by the chair this morning touches on some of these aspects as we go through this whole process. If you look at the outline of my presentation, I'm going to take you through a process very briefly about what gender responsive budget means. We're going to look at some experiences internationally, and I think Australia and all those supposed to be the leaders. And we have actually seen that there are people before running this regard. We're also going to look at some of the strengths and the weaknesses of these experiences, the overtime role that farming plays in this regard, and then of course how we can gender budget and analysis going forward. And I think this is critical because a lot of the issues that are raised here today look at the issues of budget. And maybe I think we need a different perspective on where we talk about gender mainstreaming or gender responsibility in this regard. Hopefully as we go through the process, we can see what exactly we require and we take the process forward. Colleagues, then, ladies and gentlemen, members, I think if you look at international literature, if you look at case studies, honorable chair, if you look at best practices, lessons of experience, it's interesting to note that in most local countries, and I think also in most developed economies, poverty and gender are closely linked. It's interesting. And you know women specifically are normally the poorest. And when you talk about inequality, we don't talk about inequality anymore between white and black. But we now talk about inequality between men and women. And you now refer to this as income inequality. So there's a growing gap between this major portion of our population in this country, which are women, and you have this inequality stretching out in the process. And I think this is the third form of call that we need to address going forward. Income inequality becoming a problem in this country. Of course, the overarching goal of poverty reduction calls that we address this issue of gender and the consideration of gender in the budgeting process in a systematic way, which we haven't really done. So, what then is gender responsive budgeting? And just for quick reference, and you can put it on the slide there, which I won't read for you. But it basically means that in your planning and your progress and your budgeting process, there has to be some kind of focus on gender equality and gender efficiency. I think efficiency and equality is critical in this process. So, when you plan and you program and then you budget, these two critical issues are important, specifically on the Movember, with a focus on ensuring that human rights are fulfilled. So as you can see, I think we're taking a bit of a longer train now, and we're focusing a bit more on these issues. Of course, we also know that it entails identifying and reflecting the needs and specifically interests in gender gaps in society. So what the gaps that we identify, how do we focus the process, and how do we ensure that this is part of the planning program and budgeting process in this regard? I think, Chair, what we note here overall, simple message, if we don't do this, women actually are kept out of employment, out of economic opportunities that they can contribute to
in the South African situation. So if you keep this massive population of groups of our society outside of economic opportunity, of course you won't have economic growth. Of course you won't have employment creation, etc. So it's not a good issue anymore, Chair, that women's issues or, you know, participation in economic opportunity becomes a year taken. If you don't participate, so that the economy continues to see, and we continue to have economic growth, etc. So the point that I said is that I think for too long we have been staying outside of the system. And the economists have become an economic system. We've been standing outside of the economic system. And you can say, well, you see the economy is not growing, our children are not being educated, etc. And someone falls out of this government's fault. Unfortunately, you must be part of the society, part of the economy. So you need to make a contribution. You are a major force of the society. So you need to be involved in this, and you need to make a contribution to everything. If you look at, again, the chair, some of the experiences, if you take Australia, and here's some of the examples that came out to just give you an idea of how this process has panned out. If you look at Australia, this was the first attempt by women to analyze budgets with a gender perspective. And here you have what we call a woman's budget statement. For the first time, something more concrete than just lip saying or lip indicating what growth is. And this budget statement by you is an extra part of the budget process check. This statement to you where women's issues within the whole budget process is not identified in policy areas, both economic and social policy. It also looks at the impact that all ministries have on budget revenues. Now, notice on the latest objective. It doesn't only look at expenditure factors, but also revenue. I mean, women are important about the contribution to taxation in this country. You work, you contribute, put your skills into the economy. So the revenue that the state raises comes from women as well. Also what we spend in this regard. Also what we notice is that they also include use what they call an office of the sectors of women. And this also looks at programs that should be directed on women's programs. The important point about this office is that they would order the impacts of this current gender issues that's happening in society. We notice, ladies and gentlemen, honorable members, that most gender sponsored budgeting across the world differs, so you won't find one size fits all in this regard. And they differ in terms of how to implement gender sponsored perspectives into government budget and how they promote gender equality and gender equity in this regard. We also know that together with Australia, we also have the UN, and they have what they call the Women's Budget Group. We also have the Canadians, and they have the Canadian Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. In South Africa, we have the Women's Budget Initiative. And this actually, if you look at this interesting, you find an evolution. How the process of gender sponsored budget moves through in this regard. What was important in all these cases is that you have an annual publication of a gender budget statement. Please, if you don't put the money where your mouth is, nothing happens. You can have as much policy as you like, but if you don't allocate financial resources to it, it becomes not a policy statement or statement in that regard. In Australia, the women's budget statement became centerpiece of gender sponsored budget. There was a lot of progress, although uneven, but over the past 50 years, I think some issues and some of this issues related to women's gaps identified as one realized in the country. What were the threats of the Australian seniors? And again, I'm not going to go through, but some of the things I want to make you late again, and here is the issue I made earlier about your participation in this regard. A lot of these issues were driven by bureaucrats in Australia, and I think some of you can say you find that as well. And the problem is, although they give more bureaucrats, when they leave, the process is for them as well. And also there's no political engagement in this process. So I think as politicians, as people representing us, you can't leave it up to bureaucrats to run this process of their own, unfortunately. You have to be part of this, you have to engage in this process going forward. You have to raise awareness also in this process. So, if you look at the next slide beside the Australian experience, if you look at the reasons again, as I've indicated expected to. If you leave it up to bureaucrats, you also have to then take an analysis, and I think the CG made this quite important, and the impact of this on the mainstream budgets and expenses. Also, you find that there are guidelines, nothing happens. So if you don't put guidelines into place, driven politically, unfortunately, or fortunately by you, becomes critical in this regard. I think also, I will share, you can't just look at policies and perspectives, you know, in isolation. You need to look at the macroeconomic situation as well. And I think also the MP in this regard is critical, and that provides the macroeconomic situation as well. And it provides the program, that's right. How do we fit into this at the macroeconomic level, besides looking at exchange? That is a, ladies, gentlemen, that you do get involved in what's happening in the country, the situation. Do we have a surplus? What's happening with our monetary situation? What's happening to the rank? And how all this impact on gender issues and gender responsibility in this regard. At this point, we know that there is limited focus on issues like inequality and injustices, taxation, and political issues. You play a major role in this. You work, you're a major part of the society, you pay tax, you pay into the coffers of government. So you have a major say in this, you have leverage in this regard. And you need to utilize this next, I don't know, I think the latest facts say about the fact that there are more blacks and people, more women than men in South Africa. So does that mean that you pay more taxes than us? And if you have more taxes than us? Let me come see this about this issue as we go forward. So you know to talk about this, you know, we need to consider you in our program because we are women. I think that's the wrong approach. Also, Chair, I think besides the focus on, you know, and I think the GP and the Chair also spoke about this, is there to be quantifiable indicators, to be quantifiable targets. But we also know that South Africa, and I have a problem with that, because I can't sometimes understand the budget, and the way the budget is formulated and presented to us. It is listed in very difficult language. The budget says nothing about who the beneficiaries are, who the target groups are. It's as if, you know, people like us not to understand the way buses are connected. I think these are some of the issues we need to engage in as well, so that we can play a role in terms of oversight, accountability, etc. Again, if I look just some ideas as to the UK, about experiences with the national debt, if you look at the UK, really, I think it's a critical issue. All regarding the systems. I don't think activists is good, as I said, if you play such a major part in this economy, or you actually economic changes in this regard, so I think you need to define yourself as better chair as well. In the UK, for example, the Women's Budget Group, this is a think tank. It comprises of gender activists, including civil society, labor, etc. And they became crucial in the development, because I'm also, you know, as you develop the budget, etc. They didn't only look at expenditure, they looked at revenue range and how they could play a part in this and in revenue issues. They looked at, for example, changes in taxes, how it impacted. They made specific impact into social security. And as you know, in South Africa, I think 20 million of our people are now, you know, on social security, the biggest in child grants, etc. And you can play a critical part in it. Child grant is an example of people will say, and you have different perspectives, you know, but people are saying that women in their three child grants actually start small businesses in South Africa. They use it to support their family, they use it to support their kids, etc., put them to school. So the impact that women have in this regard is South Africa, if not other countries, we just look at our country, and how women have contributed to this process has been phenomenal. So I think today, on the whole, let us say, we need to look at today, you know, how to engage in this process, how to turn and use the language in this regard. The Canadian humans are quite strong. They also look at, this is a non-governmental organization. And again, as I say, it's no one size fits all. But they, for example, look at how do we take money away from defense expenses and put it into social security. So this is lip services by how you amend the budget. The personal contribution by women making proposals, putting it forward, becoming part of the budget process. Okay. South Africa, what we notice is that there was a farm together with the NGOs going what we call the South African Women's Budget Initiative, Saudi, in 1996. It was important at that stage and it had some success because the National Society, Parliament was involved, government was involved, and international agencies. Saudi provided a role model, not only for South Africa, but for the international environment. We actually provide a role model for Australia, the UK, and some of the countries on the continent, and they still see South Africa, and South Africa as soon as it is. I think we still have some credibility as soon as started. What we noticed with Saudi was that it was a research and advocacy initiative focused initially on budgets, both national and regional budgets, not much about the government. There was a lot of research and civil society involved. If you notice, all those things did work. All those things did work. Okay. And again, I think the opportunity should be used to do some of these initiatives going forward. What we also looked at initially was that Saudi did an initial extended analysis on women for the impact of gender for the last 5 years. By extensive input, actually helped us develop policy proposals in the way that was taken. On the revenue side, there was also research into taxation, both indirect and direct taxation, and the role that we play for taxation in this regard. Okay, let's look at the strengths of the South African experience. Greater strength for that included women and support from all sectors and all elements of the society. Of course, we saw the development of a ministry that denied South Africa, and I hope the old ministry and council as well, and then Father exercised proper oversight of the ministry. But there was also issues related to, for example, integration on gender basis. If you look at the race divide, the other rural issues that I think Jenny is talking about as well, and also the focus on global carbon markets. The area that we lack, basically, as well, on governance, is what we call integrated fiscal policy issues. Is that a safe example of South Africa says there's a fiscal policy, we must achieve 5% growth over the next 2 years. There's no statement about what we might achieve agreement in the sector as part of your macroeconomic policy. So maybe we should say, you know, a key line in that policy statement should be, well, we need to have 50% of all women in senior management positions. Or one of our goals is to ensure that 60% of women are equal to that. And I think by doing those kind of statements, like the Australian did with the budget statement, you get more impact in this regard. And you can't stay out of the process of the more data. The weaknesses of South Africa, I think the first weakness is you don't see this anymore. I think our women are not playing the lead role going forward. But the point about this is that it's not being fed long by South Africa. Yes, we have powerful women in this country, but the lobbying issues that we first need to especially around the fiscal and the budget issues. The impact on the budget has been minimized. As you notice, I think if you look at some of the trends, you'll probably find that gender issues are limited in this regard, and that we actually have to step on women. Budget reform and the new budget structure has not been gender sensitive. We also find that there were no measurable targets, and this of course was also overridden by the changes that denied in government. Again, very little efforts are invested into research, advocacy, and the issue that I mentioned, that we still think that these are active and not harmful economic environment. Budget issues that we deal with. In terms of the oversight role of Parliament in the budgeting process, I think we've noticed, honourable members, ladies and gentlemen, that Parliament does play a very strong oversight role. And this is the role of the legislature. The role of the legislature is to exercise oversight. And oversight means that you monitor, that you measure, that you implement, and that you also ask for answers going forward. And this is what the role of oversight is. And the role of oversight of the legislature in this regard is difficult. Here's, I think, one issue that we could use almost immediately to ensure that these issues are taken into account is by exercising the oversight role going forward. Besides the Bible issue, ladies and gentlemen, honorable members, I think the Bible is not only important for equitable distribution of resources, it's also important that we ensure efficiency in this regard. Equity and efficiency are two sides of the same coin. They're not necessarily the same, but equity and efficiency are different. So, are you efficient when you deal with human issues or gender issues? Are you equitable in that sense? So I think the two issues, efficiency and equity, are critical also. And I hope we're picking up some of the issues that we can make to maybe develop some kind of agenda going forward. I think some of the issues that I need to raise, just as an example of some of the issues that you could put on the agenda. First of all, okay, success in reducing inequality and poverty, I think this is a fulfiller outside function for agenda. In this regard, we need to ensure that the allocation of funds to ministries, departments, that address gender equality in institutions are taken cognizance of. And we need to understand that going forward. I mean, for too long, we've also been saying, you know, when it comes to budget, that not our job, the job of financial officers or CFOs. But if you're not involved in this, if you don't understand, you will be cut out in this process. You need to insist on transparency in this regard. Transparency in how programs are formulated. Transparency in how budgets are formulated. Transparency in whether it's part of this budget process or not. And I guess you're probably not part of the budget process anyway. You probably see it later on. So you need the kind of issues. You need to have participation by organizations, and I think grassroots organizations are critical in this regard. When you see oversight, I think grassroots organizations need to inform our portfolio committee and our chair of our portfolio committee on what the issues are, so that when oversight is explained and developed, your views are there and take them cognizant of in this regard. I don't know if I want to say that you need to be taken cognizant of in the medium term experience framework, because this is a critical issue, and I think it raises it all the time. How you get involved in this process is critical. How you exercise your role and respect through parliament or NGOs or civil society is going to be the issue that you need to focus on in this regard. You also need to, unfortunately, ladies and gentlemen, at issues around tax, revenue, expenditure, and what this means for you going forward. Without these understandings, you will not understand why childcare grants are important. Why we should see them alone, why they are not specific, for example, social security issues for women in this regard, and I think these are the issues we need to consider
Chair, Deputy,
I think it's also important that by utilizing some of your resources for this fund, amongst others, the budget office, some of the issues that you could focus on in this regard is assistance with economic policy. And how we could assist and how we could assist in developing economic policy issues in this regard. Looking at issues around expenditure, revenue, and gender sensitivity. Gender revenue projects as well. For example, as I mentioned to you, we must be represented in tax relief programs, etc. And then the budget as an instrument for pushing for economic and social rights going forward. I think South Africa has one of the most progressive policies, I think, in this regard, not only in the region, but internationally as well. I believe South Africa has made significant strides in reducing women's or improving women's well-being. And there are programs that have been introduced at the university. But clearly, if you listen to the anecdotal evidence out there, there seems to be issues involved. There isn't sufficient monitoring mechanisms to track progress on advancing gender equality, not only at macro level, but also at different sectors. I think you need an institution like the Scottish Roundtable to budget it, and you need to decide how you form a grouping whether it be violence or, you know, the different sectors, different relations and vital processes. And we need to build capacity and skills in this area. So, Chair, just my conclusion, and I guess, you know, I hope with the little note that I made to you at this point. There is a difference between gender responsibility and gender mainstreaming. Gender mainstreaming, I think, is simply refers to the fact that we all take cognizance of that, you know, we say, well, the word gender is programmed. So the policy contains gender. So, you know, that's gender mainstreaming. Gender responsibility is something else. And I don't know, I think gender mainstreaming has worked as a term. Because what we do in South Africa is, you know, every time we say, oh, you know, we need to include women, we say, well, you know, let's include the word women and children in the policy, and that's gender mainstreaming. Gender responsibility is a different issue. And it's an issue I can be to take cognizance of, to make the environment shape again. Gender-based budgeting refers to budget and expenditure arrangement, which is structured in a manner that ensures that women and men benefit equitably from financial resources. Gender-responsive budgeting refers to the allocation of financial resources that not only ensures that women and men benefit equally, but also reduces existing patterns of human inequality, systematic inequality. And then, let me leave you with this, I think, point that we raised in this discussion. We can't do such a major group from the African society. Not if you want to grow this economy, not if you want to create employment, not if you want to address issues of inequality and poverty. You can't exclude this group from the budget project, both in terms of expenditure and revenue. You can't exclude this group from developing policies and programs. If you do, I think 60% of our population are not part of what we say we want to achieve as a country. And okay, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for our support.
Thank you very much, Professor Janice. I think we all have learned new things. This was a really eye-opener. Compatriots and comrades and colleagues, we now have time for discussion, but please bear in mind that some of us have to go to some other position. And I think, like a bit earlier on, we are not going to turn away or answer all the questions that we have. We have commissions tomorrow, and some of the questions that we have can be addressed in the commission. And I think now that we have the two presenters here, we can ask them questions if there's any. I see one hand there. The third hand from the first, and that's it, and the fourth hand here. Is it correct? Okay. Can you start now?
Thank you, Chief President. I'm Lonsa Takoja from the Health Commission Legislature. My few points. Is it possible to get the first presentation by Jane, the copy of the presentation? The second one, I understand that there are revelations from the previous council discussions. I think if it is possible, can get them so that to monitor how far have we gone in terms of implementation. And the third point, is on disabled. I understand that if you are based upon at least the 2% of employment of disabled in the workplace, what attempts are we making to ensure that this is implemented? Because we need to have clear policies and we need to be radical if we are talking of even our husbands should talk to. Thank you.
Thank you, Boris Shalom. Noma leso mthathile kwabakhubazekile ngiyabonga. Owami ukuthi umthetho ukuthi imuphi xa wenza beshudekelele lamakhoshazi agame amakhosi indlela ahlumezela ngayo emakhaya njengokuthi mhlambe uma ngabe dala ulotshelelwa sizwe egcineni lo nkosikazi ayisekeni akanalo izwi noma mhlawumbe khona la engaboni khona ngashonye nomyeni wakhe. Ina konke lokho sekolodaba sekuyokhuluma induna zesigodi ngabe indaba zasekameleni ngabe kuphi ngabe inkosi yabana yena nje kuphela ungosikazi kuphela kufanele athule yilokho nanokuthi-ke sibhekelele ngempela isikhathini esifazane ngabe basikhuluma ngokulingana noma ngokubhekelelwa kwabo sithini ngalendlela abahlukumezeka ngayo manje. Utholakala ukuthi ngempela uganile endlini kodwa lanendlini akakhululekile ngaloko kuphela nje ukudla kuhlukumezeka ngayiphi indlela engendichazele igama lithi nje makabekezele. Ngiyabonga ngabulambi kunjani makabekezele indoda yayimoti yahambe iqonde yasiyarit yakenzela wena unkosikazi. Ngiyabonga.
I agree and understand what Mama Kaula is talking about, but I don't think we're dealing with that now. So those who are into will deal with that tomorrow. Your wife and the last one here.
Okay, thank you. My name is Ina Chikudikonati. I'm from that work for me. Honorable Chair, I'm actually going to ask my questions subject to correction and also agreeing to the event discussion that can be discussed because I understand there's some round tables because of what my colleague said earlier about the resolution. In the manual of the ministry, general ministry, these presenters, I don't remember, talked about the new framework that is actually being launched by this new member. Now, the question that I want to raise is how will the legislature, the federal provinces, will promote the issue of gender while they don't have a, you know, equal cast desk on issues of women, disabled, or even children. You only have that in your department of social development. I don't know in other provinces where that thing actually interpreted. So I see it as being a challenge because that focus group is not actually being isolated as a group that it will actually be highlighted and be assisted in another scheme level. So I somehow think that it's been clouded, you know, by those departments that they fall under. So that I really need clarity on that one. And also, the issue of budget in that regard is somehow being not considered as being mentioned in different presentations. The budget is insufficient. You don't have OCAP budget. Like the earlier presentation by Jimmy, that says that you actually don't have a penny on your industry task or even your target. It also becomes a problem because it doesn't actually talk about the performance that you can get from that focus unit or department of gender budgeting. I also understand the same problem of integrated fiscal policy, which is actually not clear on the whole program. I actually think somehow this should be a way of developing, but if that framework, it will be important enough to deal with that integrated fiscal policy for energy.
Chief
Minister,
yes.
question. Thank you. I just wanted to pick up on the juxtaposition of gender responsive budgeting and gender mainstreaming. Because, sorry, Jenny Schreiner from the Department of Women. I think that from where I'm sitting, gender responsive budgeting is probably one of the most important tenets of gender mainstreaming. If we approach gender mainstreaming as so long as we talk about women somewhere in the doctor, and that for me is society women, it's not actually a transformative process at all. And we need to ensure that gender responsive budgeting is supported by a process of assessing the implications for men and women of that particular piece of legislation, that particular policy, that particular strategy or program. And hence, we've allocated money to it. And I thought that one of the elements that would be useful to raise here, and perhaps to ask the professor to engage with this, the process of introducing the socioeconomic impact assessment system into government that will enable us to not only legislation, but key policy programs. For me, it's another very important mechanism of ensuring that gender mainstream really does become mainstreaming. And if we really do look at the implications of it. But I think that for me, part of what we should be trying to understand is how gender mainstreaming requires gender focal points and accountability in governance. It requires the socioeconomic impact assessment in relation to gender. It requires us to have gender integrity, and even it requires us to have gender focus. But I hope that it would be useful to draw the expertise of the implementers on.
Two extra questions, can you put these through? Because I'm looking at time and we can change a little bit because we need to have some of the projects.
Thank you, President. My most thanks to you, Abby. For points to benefit everyone equal and equitable, challenges and goals are often needed. For example, if a woman from my village don't have access to free transport, no, to low-cost child care. Very few will be able to take an advantage of important social or vocational programs. In that case, do you always consider both when you budgeting? That's my take.
Thank you, Chair. I think my name is Sheila Shobhisthorpe. I'm a member of the Appropriation Committee. I also represent the National Assembly in the Equality Review Committee of South Africa. I don't have a question, Paul. I just want to question your budget office to do a research for us on the tax that is paid by women in the private sector and in the public sector in South Africa. That's one. And the other one is a research on the economic inclusion of women in the private sector. Because I think the public sector is doing okay. Thank you.
Now I want us to talk about that issue of this letter of the
Pastor Mary Rodich.
Yes. Okay, thank you. I was going to talk to the, if you look at the commission tomorrow, I think what you are raising will be raised tomorrow. And I think it would be proper if you go to a commission that will be talking to that. But at this point, I'll ask the professor to respond to the question that has been asked. I'm not sure if another member as well wants to respond to some questions. But there are also still the continental here. So maybe let's go to another member and then go to professor to offer a response. And let us start with the question at hand.
Secretary Chatterton, on the issue of the developed and legislative framework for the advancement of the rights of children with mental health and disabilities, the members of parliament, through their committees and their legislators, have the responsibility to ensure that the framework of these rights they have to do when conducting oversight during the participation, and while enhancing the international participation as well as facilitating the cooperative government. And this is also as to remind the implications of Parliament's co-function of the gender perspective. That's the answer.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Issues of municipalities or of the departments.
part of my challenge is that because I'm from the Department of Women, anything that relates to women, we're expected to be able to answer. And I will refer some of these questions to the relevant department. For example, there was a question around termination of pregnancy. I certainly don't have a contested those details. That would be a responsibility of the Department of Health. My understanding is the Department of Health has a very good database, whether it gets down to the level of girl children in school and the impact of that we would have to look at. But I think it's a very relevant question. There are obviously also issues that need to be addressed at municipal level, particularly around the issues of infrastructure for informal business, and that does impact very directly on women. And those are issues that would need to be measured through inaction of COSTA, but also obviously with COSTA and the municipal managers themselves. There was a question raised around foreign nationals, and I'm not sure whether that was a question related to others at the department or back to Parliament. But I think that it is a very important element for us to be able to look at, because in one sense the services of government are there for anybody who's living in the country, and we need to ensure that there's no discrimination or inequity in that access. But I think that it is also important for us to be able to ascertain are there a unique set of challenges and circumstances that come from that particular community. The issue of regional cooperation is a very important one. And I think for us, as part of our Women's Month process, we have picked up on that in relation to a partnership with Procedure around issues of trans-border employment patterns. And unfortunately, the restricted citizens coming to South Africa and really on the raw end of employment practices in South Africa that I'm sure people would realize that there's not media coverage some time back. But that's where a partnership between a range of other different departments, our Home Affairs, Department of Labour, ourselves, and the counterparts of the city, is beginning to look at how we manage those processes so that we do create different opportunities within the region, but at the same time, we don't land up where regional women then become the super exploited in the other countries. Similarly, we are going into a partnership with Zimbabwe, and we've got a trade fair coming up this week end of this week, in Mosina, where we're looking at carriage patterns between women this side of the border and women that side of the border, and looking at the partnerships and the challenges of the border customs systems and the issue of the challenges of women, businesswomen wanting to do business across the borders. So I think those are issues that are increasingly coming up. I think that the other element, obviously, that is critical is the issues of economic migration within the South region. And getting a better understanding as we go forward about what the pattern of women's economic migration is within the region. Citizens are suffering and being run out of time. I'm going to go through as many as I can.
We'll elaborate tomorrow when we deal with the media commission. Because,
unfortunately, I'm not sure. So if I can. Okay. I think that there was a very interesting question raised about older women and the issue of mentoring, and I really do think that there is an area there that we've not begun to explore effectively. We are critically aware of the importance of employment opportunities and work experience opportunities for young women, and I'm sure that we can look at that aspect as we go forward. I think the other element that was raised was the issue of M&E. And certainly there's no point in tracking where money is going if in fact one doesn't look at the quality of services. So the more that you're able to get the right data, because our data you don't get effective M&E, and most importantly, data that is going to reflect on the impact of services, it will certainly improve our processes. We are, as government, vastly improving in our energy processes. We have a long way to go. But I think the critical element is generalizing that monitoring.
the issue of widows has come up in a number of senses, and I think it's critically important for us all, but particularly for Parliament, to be looking at is the experience that is being reflected to have because there are gaps in laws, or is it because there are gaps in the way in which laws are being implemented, or is it in fact gaps in our understanding of women and therefore our ability to maximise our rights? And my own sense from discussion is that we probably should be looking at all three of those elements. If we don't ensure that women, along with the education and the skills, are being trained in the law and the rights that we've got in law, how then do we actually take the steps to be able to realise it? I think that the next point was around the issue of ensuring that in, for example, the 9-point plan, which is the program that the government has developed to take that radical economic transformation forward in a very serious way, it is fundamentally critical that we pose the questions of women and gender within that. Because otherwise we can very easily land up where we've got a black national strategy. A critical part of the 9-point plan is deepening local industrialization, ensuring that we've got South African indigenous industrialists, that we are not landing up where the industrialization of South Africa is being done from other people's shores. It would be a tragedy if we look back in 20 years' time or 30 years' time and realize that industrialization, that local industrialization drive, has in fact resulted in men becoming industrialists, women being marginalized, and in particular black women being marginalized from those processes. So unless we put those issues up front now, we will look back and history will judge us quite seriously. So it is, in agriculture, there is a critical part of being able to look at the way in which we implement the agricultural public action plan. The part of that program, for example, is relating to development and support of smallholders in agriculture and ensuring that the beneficiaries of that indeed are women as much as they are men. I thought that an element that I had neglected to raise, and that I should raise strongly so it can go into the Commission, is the ASCA 2063 vision and agenda. And we do need to ensure that as we think through the issues in the Commission, we are looking at the issues of the African continent, the partnerships that we can develop across the continent, both in terms of sharing the experience of gender response to budgeting and monitoring the evaluation, but actually entering into partnerships that can transform the experience of women within the continent. Much as there are diversities, there are also very similar experiences across the first point process. And then I thought that the last part of it was just to pick up on the point that was made that I would really appreciate the nation making our jobs to the process of women a much easier. And it really got me that we have to get to a point where everybody in this country, the private sector, the public sector, all government departments, all ministries, the community, the labour organisations, are all consistently engaged with around what is their particular contribution to moving forward women's empowerment. And certainly, if we can get that as gender mainstreaming, and if we can really gender mainstream in that way, it will be able to do that forward. And we do need to ensure that our foot is on the accelerator, and if we don't land up, we're doing stop driving. Because I think I tried to just whiz through those questions, but I will include them in the detailed response.
Thank you very much. I hope that tomorrow we have somebody from the department to take us through some of the issues that we have raised, because we have everybody, we're planning for this round table as the young community. We said that this time around we're going to make this thing different. It's not going to be a talk show. Every decision that we're going to take here, we said, will make sure that it's being implemented. And I think that's why it's important for us to have the sort of department of the young department will be here tomorrow. We all want to have questions like she asked earlier on, what has happened the last time we had the round table until now? Because if we have ongoing discussions, what have the type of questions? Because we'll know exactly how far are we, because we're going to, although I go to commission, we need to set targets and say, by this time, this is what we should have achieved this.
as a workshop. So I think these are the things that we need to be pushing. I agree with you fully. You know, workers from Lesotho, they get working to come here to the mines and all that. But when it comes to domestic workers, they have to report to a Western city every month and all that, and it becomes very difficult for them. So these are some of the things that are saying are inequality. And if it's done for men, why can't it be done for women as well? So I think there's a lot of things, like I said before, that we need to tackle together as women. And I think tomorrow we'll share experiences. We're starting tomorrow at 8:30. If we can try to be on time, because again tomorrow we're going to start sleeping later on. So if we can try to be on time tomorrow. Yeah? Oh, the buses, they only arrive here at 9. So I think if we can try to like 10 or 9 on the job tomorrow. And with all that, thank you very much for all your contributions. This is, we have come to the end of discussion today. There will be Asha will be waiting outside.
Come on, 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 come on,
come on, come on, come on, come on, come. There will be actors outside the door, will be taking you to the dining hall, and that's where they are to be served. Enjoy your time, we'll see each other tomorrow. Thank you very much.